Blog Talk Radio.
And now, live from Jacksonville, Florida, and New York City, it's the Mike Boyle Show, starring Mike Boyle, with tonight's special political pundit guest, Ryan James Gudorski.
So, hello, everybody. Hey. So, yeah, you know, Ryan is a political pundit, but, you know, he's a comedian, too. And I think he wants to talk about that. And, as a matter of fact, you saw him last night at the Comic Strip Live, right, Marco?
So, yes, we performed together right on the stage.
Yeah,
so, it got very sweaty between me and Ryan up there. But
I'm sure he doesn't want people knowing that. So we're going to talk to Ryan in a couple seconds. We're not going to make him wait too long. I just wanted to say hello to everybody. I want to announce to Marco that I will be coming back to New York very soon. We're going to have a very big surprise announcement soon.
Yeah,
coming up soon, Marco, baby.
Yep, it's going to happen.
And,
I think it's going to happen.
Yes. And I want to thank everybody for supporting Rotten Apple. Thank you so much, everybody. And I am very excited to talk to Ryan. Ryan Gudorski, everybody, is our guest tonight. So you've seen him on Fox News. You've seen him in comedy clubs all over the city. The guy's he's doing his thing. I mean, I can't wait to talk to him. So we're not going to make him wait. He's hanging in here. He's waiting. He doesn't have a bunch of time tonight. So normally we talk for a few minutes and then bring the guest on. But he's only got about 35, 40 minutes before he's got to split. So we're going to get right to our guest tonight. Okay,
he's,
Mark?
He probably has to go on Sean Hannity.
Whatever he's got to do. We're just going to say hello, okay? So, hey, Ryan, welcome to the Mike Boyle Show. How are you, brother?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, hear you fine. Welcome. I'm very excited to talk to you. Tell me, you did comedy last night. You've done TV things. You've written for people. What's the most fun for you?
Oh, for me, it has to be writing for other people. You know, I'm not a great stage personality. I love doing comedy. I love the reaction. I love the laugh. I'm not a person. I don't need to get on stage though to do it. I could have someone else tell my jokes for me.
Yeah, give it to me. I'll do it. I'll do your
act.
Someone's funny though, Mark. I love that aspect. I love writing. I love the craft of writing a joke, and you know, when you have an idea and it could be insane and you sit there and you write and you rewrite and you rewrite and you sit there and try to come up with a premise and figure out how you can make it shorter, how you can make it more relative. And that's what I really love more than anything else. That's what I did for Milo Yiannopoulos when I worked for him and a bunch of other people. Just sat there, wrote jokes and tried to make them, as funny as possible and as relevant as possible to what they needed to do.
Okay, so I was a big fan of Milo. I thought the guy was incredibly smart, very, very talented. And, you know, the guy was brilliant. So when you wrote for him, was it your job just to make him funny, or did you give him any of those facts? I mean, the guy knew so much. He had so many facts. Was it your job just to punch him up? I mean, what was your function?
Well, Milo is very smart, naturally. He went to Oxford. I mean, he's a bright guy, and he's funny on his own. He's very quick, and he's funny on his own, so natural reactions I wouldn't write. But when he had to do press releases or Facebook statements or his book or speeches, I would sit there, and I would punch up, and I would write jokes for. I mean, it depends on which venue it was. I didn't write any, like, the facts for book or anything like that, but usually when he would have a speech, he would assign me to write an entire speech, and it was mostly just to sit there or he'll give me a speech that was already written that he wrote or someone wrote or one of his staff members wrote, and I would punch up the jokes. So that was mostly my function, but he's very quick on his own and funny on his own, so a lot of the natural stuff, that the natural reactions he would have to people or to events or to things or something that happened live, that's all him.
Well, the guy made tremendous news, obviously, and it's the political landscape in this country. I mean, but I just think it's, you know, somebody who reached that many people, whether they loved him or whether they hated him. I mean, he was a phenomenon for a while, right? And I hope he gets a chance to come back. I mean, I can't believe he's just like that. He's just gone for whatever reason. I don't even know why, you know. But I think he's,
well, he's
on
tour right now. His book was a number two New York Times bestseller. It should have been number one. They had number one in sales. But it was a number two New York Times bestseller. And he's on tour right now. So you never know. I mean, people ebb and flow. You know, no career is solidly the same throughout the entire time. I mean, look at anybody. Any celebrity will have, you know, moments that they sit there and they recede and then they come back and they're strong. So, I mean, it's certainly not completely written for him. Other people I've worked for, James O'Keefe has had multiple ups and downs in his career. But, you know, if you're talented and if people really want you and you have your base, you can't always come back. You know, listen, Kathy Griffin could possibly come back, and right now she couldn't get arrested on television.
Right. That's a rough rough call for her.
Well,
she screwed herself, really. I mean, there's just no other way about it.
Yeah. Well, I think Kathy Griffin was an incredible comedian. I used to really laugh when
well,
I used to watch her.
Well, not so much.
Well, I used to really laugh
comedian.
When I watched her before. I really used to laugh when I watched her perform.
Her show was funny.
Yeah, I used to watch her perform and used to laugh. And, you know, and for me, listen, I love comedy and I love people that make me laugh. But the truth is that she just got too vicious. I mean, and we have to respect, listen, I was on stage every night and Barack Obama was president. I didn't agree with half the shit he was doing, but I never said nothing bad about him. He was president of the United States. And I think people have a right not to like Donald Trump, but you have to not hate the president of the United States if you're an American. I mean, unless he's taking troops and killing people in the streets, you kind of have to not hate the president of the United States. And so I think that's what she did wrong. I mean, you can't just openly hate the president. Come on. You could disagree with
well,
him.
Well, I don't know if that's exactly what it's not a matter of you can hate the president or like the president. You have to be funny. I think you have to know your role. And I think a lot of celebrities forget their role. They're not spokes. They're not, you know, Jimmy Kimmel or Kathy Griffin or any of people. They're not the moral compass of the country. They're not great political minds. And no one is turning to them for that information. And I think the fact is that they sit there and they get overwhelmed and they believe that they have greater influence than they actually do. And I, you know, Tucker Carlson has this great saying for people of Daily Caller. It's name the issue you love or hate the most, and you're not allowed to report on it because you can't possibly report from a fair or moderate or reasonable angle. And I think that's a very, very smart opinion to sit there and have for it. I think that Kathy, being this ardent leftist, sat there and thought that anything was on the table, that she could absolutely make any decision she wanted to, and that it would all be embraced because she's known as a funny person. But the fact is it wasn't funny, and that her opinion was completely diluted because of her obsessive opinions about Donald Trump. You know, even in comedy, I don't joke about things I'm extremely passionate about simply because it's not fun, like especially with politics, it's not funny to me. So if I'm so angry about, you know, I don't know, immigration, or so angry about an issue, I'm not going to make a joke about it because it will not come across as funny. It will come across as preachy, and even people who agree with me at that point will find it extraordinarily annoying.
Well, I think here's what I think. I think a lot of people in Hollywood are making careers out of hating Trump, and I think it's despicable. And I'll tell you why. You know, I say it all the time, Ryan. You know, the little tiny platform I have, I tell people, you know, half the people in this country are not getting rid of the other half. Sorry. So why don't we just shut the fuck up and try to get along a little bit? You know what I mean? So, you know, but it's just disgraceful. But if you look at Colbert and all these guys, like, I didn't know who the fuck Colbert was. Now, all of a sudden, he's got this huge show. And really, all it is night after night after night just bashing the shit out of the president. And talk about funny. I think Kathy Griffin used to be a lot funnier than Colbert. And Colbert's a huge
star.
Oh,
Colbert's not playing at all. He's not playing at all.
Yeah,
it just goes to, I didn't believe in, I mean, I'm not a big believer that there is, that white people have benefits, minorities don't, until I saw the Colbert show. But although Trevor Noah is not funny either, so you never know which way it is.
Well, can I say something
about him?
He's
not funny.
Can I say something about Trevor Noah? I think I think first of all, he's too cutesy, and you know, he's like too like, you know, I'm so cute and I'm so funny. You know, like at least the Jon Stewart had a big nose. He was, you know, he had like an attitude. So, you know, you could accept it more from Jon Stewart than this cute little perky guy who just thinks he's so great. It's Jon Stewart, you knew he had problems. And that's why I kind of liked him. The interesting thing I find about go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it also comes to the fact of you're having an American political show being head up by somebody who's not American.
Right, he's South African, correct.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it loses its – yeah, he's South African. It loses some of its likability because it's – you know, it. Some people sit there and say, well, you're really not from here, so who the hell are you to sit there and say
– Right.
It's true, though. It's true. Who are you to sit there? You've been here for 7 minutes and you have a problem with this country?
Yeah, get the fuck out. But I'm going to tell you, and it's just all getting – we're just getting way too carried away in this country about, you know, like – and it's all the same bullshit. Like, you know, they're all leaving. If Trump got elected, I don't see anybody fucking leaving. You know, like the one good thing about America is you can leave, but nobody's leaving. Why is that?
Right.
You know, who's that fat bitch?
Well, actually, people are leaving. It's just not the right people are leaving. But we have more people leaving America now than ever before. People, I think last year or this year was the highest amount of people who got rid of their citizenship to this country.
Really?
It's been on the increase for years, though. It's not just this year. It's been on the increase for years. It's not a Trump thing. It's a thing. It's a cult. It's what's happening in America right now thing.
Well,
and
they can't afford to stay here. A lot of people are going to Central America because they can live on their Social Security down there and stuff. Like, I don't think it's that.
What is it then?
Yeah.
I just think that there's a certain amount of people who feel that America has lost its dynasticism. Is that the word?
Dynasticism.
Yes. Yeah. America is not the place where things are really happening anymore the way that we used to be. I think a lot of people are looking to Singapore. They're looking to these beacons of free market, where the free market's prospering, where there is an ability for people to create. I think that's where there's a little more economic stability. I think that people do fear that America is, you know, I think people really do believe America is a nation in decline. And there's thousands of people every year who do not want to be, or making the conscious decision not to be here for the decline.
Well,
the Pacific Rim is the place then, I guess, right?
Well, the Pacific Rim, I mean, lots going on in Asia. Bolivia is, I mean, if I had to flee to a country, I would flee to Bolivia. But, not Bolivia, Uruguay. My bad. Uruguay is a great country to go to. Switzerland, Liechtenstein. There are these places, Liechtenstein, I've become obsessed with it lately. It's got principality and it has 1% unemployment, and the GDP per capita, the average income per person, is $150,000 per person. It's one of the richest nations on earth. Income tax is 1%. The prince has the ability to get rid of any law he doesn't like, but the people can disbar the prince, and secessionism is legal. So there's a lot of it's one of those, and it's a small country, it's a tiny country, so that model can't be mimicked all over the world. But it is one of the countries that people are – there's a need for the government to be accountable to the people and the people to sit there and have the ability to, you know, not leave their house but leave the whole country if they want to. It's a very interesting place. But there's also places like that all over the world where people sit there and say, you know, I don't want to be here if America falls apart. Where would I go to? And they're talking a lot about Asia and you know, we'll see.
Well, how do you feel about Broadcom coming back? to the United States today. I mean, they announced today Broadcom was coming back. I mean, you have to admit that that's kind of like nobody's going to give the president credit. I mean, but is that that's kind of something, right? Like all of a sudden, people are coming back here. Broadcom's
yeah, the president has done. The Trump has done a job no one could have predicted. 3% GDP was considered a fantasy in everyone's mind just a few months ago, and that's a reality now. And it's strictly because of his position to make America listen. Money goes where money is wanted, and it stays where it's appreciated. Money is not something that can be anywhere at any time. Tell people in Detroit that, or people in upstate New York. Money goes where it's wanted and appreciated, and so does capital. And Trump is trying to make the American economy through a deregulation, through his promise. I don't think Trump is sending a single regulatory bill. Through his efforts of deregulation, through his efforts of trying to do tax reform, his tax reform bill is 90% of it is brilliant. Through all
one question, I have a question about the tax bill. What do you think about the deduction for state and local taxes, them trying to outlaw that? That's going to hurt a lot of people, wouldn't it?
It's not. So the state and local taxes is not outlawing it. What they're doing is they're reducing the amount. The amount is $20,000 currently. It would reduce it to $10,000.
Oh, okay. So it's a compromise, which is something I could agree with.
Right. It's not. Yeah. You know, they don't completely destroy it. It's a reduction in state and local taxes. I think the fact is that a lot of states like Florida and Texas, which have no state income tax, Tennessee has no state income tax, they're tired of footing the bill for these big blue states and that have huge, tremendous tax burdens. And we spend millions of dollars trying to relieve those tax burdens. And I think that that's why there's a lot of angst. You know, we don't have a lot of – there's not a lot of Republicans. In New York City, there's one. In the urban cities of New Jersey, there aren't many. So there's no representation either with this debate. You know, that's the problem with this hyper-polarization in our politics is the fact that there's no representation, broad representation. In just 10 years ago, let's say in New York City, we had a Republican state senator in every borough, and in Queens we had two. And then over the years, four of them were defeated, with the exception – one retired, but three others were defeated. And we have one in Brooklyn and one in Staten Island. But when they conference together about things, and they are the majority, the Republicans in the New York State Senate, when they conference together, there isn't a voice in New York City at that table. There's two, but there's no voice for Queens. There's no voice for Manhattan. There's no voice for the Bronx. So it's a struggle to sit there and get your voice heard. And so when they have these discussions, I mean, there's one voice for New York City. There's none for Los Angeles. There's none for Chicago. There's one for Miami who's about to retire. It's problematic for a lot of these big cities that don't have any representation. They're so heavily one party or the other. And similarly, when Democrats are in charge, rural America doesn't really have a voice at all. So that's a huge problem with this hyperpolarization is who has a voice and who has a seat at the table. But yeah, this is in what we were saying about Fort Mark. This is a big screw you to the blue states and to the cities, this reduction. And they give things, you know, Ivanka Trump got her child care reduction, so you could $1,600 instead of $1,000. But that was that's something she fought for from the time her dad was campaigning, and Republicans laughed at her that would never be included in the bill. And she lobbied for it. She fought for it. She sat with Marco Rubio and Mike Lee, and they got it done. So good for her.
Well, she's the liberal voice of the Trump family, right?
Well, her huge thing was what she promised to be a voice for was for women and how to get women in a better hand for women, for working women.
Right.
So this child care credit for $1,600, if you're a working woman of, you know, a moderate means, $1,600 is $600 extra a year is a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah. Let me say this to you, Mark.
Me?
What he's saying is true. If you live in a state where all they want to do is give Section 8, I'm not against helping people that really need help. I'm not. But if they, you live in a state where all they want to do is give people Section 8 and give people food stamps and give people welfare and give people every fucking thing they want and just tax. And so, okay, your property taxes are ridiculous. I mean, crazy to support all that. Then, you know, why should you get to write it off on the federal government? That's where you live. That's the people that you're electing. That's how you choose to live in New Jersey. I come from New Jersey, but that's how you choose to live in New Jersey. That's how you choose to live in New York City. That's how you're running your government. Why should the rest of the country have to sit there and go, okay, write all that shit off on your federal taxes, we'll all pay, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Well, there's another thing about it. You know, New York doesn't get anywhere near back as much as it puts out in tax revenue. And that's a fact, too.
Right. Well, no, that is absolutely true. And I the one part of the bill that I really don't like, but this also plays into the fact that there was no one at the table from New Jersey or New York or California, was that they're reducing the amount of money you can write off on mortgages. They're reducing
right.
it from $1 million to $500,000. Now, in you live in most parts of the country, a $500,000 house is a huge house across the South, across the Midwest, in huge parts of suburbia, upstate New York, New England. $500,000 buy you a nice middle class house. In New York City, it won't buy you a studio. But there was it's
sure,
true though.
Man.
But that's it's 100% the truth. But there was no voice in New York City. And the fact that the Democrats sat there and said, nope, not going to be part of the conversation. We're not even going to try. And we're going to resist and all the rest of it. That's what you get, though. That's the kind of government you sit there and you get. So people can sit there and meanwhile, middle-class people, some who probably voted for Trump, get screwed over. But it's not a matter of the fact that, you know, it's the fact that there's no representation from their communities. You know, in Congress, we have one Republican, and he's from Staten Island, the cheapest borough to live in, not shading Staten Island, but it's the truth, and Brooklyn, which is more expensive. But even in Staten Island, you can afford a house or an apartment for $500,000. It's the fact is that that's what happens with hyperpolarization, is when one body is in full control, huge segments of the population have absolutely no voice in a quote-unquote democracy.
Now you are actually, you are one of the local candidate in here in New York, you know, is that you're working for is in fact a Democrat, right?
Yes, he is a Democrat on the Republican ticket.
Oh, is
so
he one
New
of
York
the,
State,
is he one of the people who conferences with the Republicans in the Senate? Is that his
no,
deal?
No, no, that's the IDC. No, that's for the state Senate. So in New York City, we have an unusual law that's only around like four or five states, and basically. You can be a member of a different party and run under a party that you're not registered with. So if you want to run, you can run under four, five, six, seven parties.
Right.
Happens every single year. It's called a Wilson Bakula. It is a certificate from a party saying that you can run under their party line. Party lines are distributed by who gets the most vote in the governor's election. So
right.
you go to the voting book, it says Republican, or Democrat, Republican, Conservative, Working Family Party, Independence, Women's Equality, Green, whatever the hell it goes to. So, yeah, that's, I mean, because it's like, and then people can make their own parties up. So the candidate I am working for is a centrist, moderate Democrat. He's, you know, he's pro-choice, but he's, but you know, and he's for taxing, what is his big thing? Taxing developers, because in Queens County, developers are destroying our communities, one over the other. He wants to tax developers if they build condos. He's trying to fight for more parking because, I mean, we all drive in my area. So, you know, things that are not super hyper-political. So
right.
the Republican Party endorsed him, and he ran the Democratic primary. He lost, but he's now he's running the general. Everyone knows he's a registered Democrat. It's very well known, and he's running under the Republican, conservative, dump de Blasio, and Reform Party lines.
Gotcha.
I mean, what I saw a headline today where, I mean, de Blasio was out there saying, today I am a Muslim too. I mean, the day after a Muslim runs down a New York City people with a truck, I mean,
he must be sure that he's going to win.
I think that there is, so, okay, so There is no such thing, and my true form belief, there is no such thing as somebody who is an atheist, right? Everyone has a religion. It's a choice between if you have a civic religion, a political religion, or a doctoral religion, like a faith. And Bill de Blasio does not have – he has a political religion. The political religion is left-wing American progressivism. And the most sacred of all sacraments in the text of left-wing American progressivism is diversity. You cannot question it. You cannot argue with it. You have to believe in it full, 100%. Even when it makes absolutely no sense, it is always perfect and it is infallible and it's unquestionable. So the day after a Muslim who got into America on a diversity visa, rented a Home Depot truck. By the way,
lottery.
Diversity lottery. It's the diversity visa lottery, yeah.
Right.
By the way, if he had just waited a few hours beforehand and drove through the Halloween parade, imagine how many people he would have killed. I mean, we're lucky he was a dumb terrorist. Anyway, he...
Most of them are.
Some of them planned it much better than this guy did. But anyway, eight people are dead, 9 more are wounded. He sits there, and Andrew Cuomo said yesterday during his press conference, he talked about assault weapons. Does that have to do with anything? But you deflect to your political religion. You cannot question the diversity visa, even though 30 – you can't question it. It's not allowed. It is absolutely – and I cover this extensively for Red Alert Politics. The left inherently will always – eat itself. Always. There is no point when you can become a leftist that you will not eventually eat your own. Bill Clinton, greatest political mind of the 1990s, the savior of the Democratic Party after 3 straight landslide losses, he was attacked and slandered by Black Lives Matter groups in the 2016 campaign to the point where he really couldn't campaign for Hillary as much as he probably would have wanted to.
You see that with
Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was the conservative in the Democratic primary. You see that, and you will see that with Bernie Sanders in 2020 or 2024.
Well,
eventually,
Donna Brazile came out against Hillary Clinton, so that she rigged.
Well, she's trying to save her own ass. She's doing her own thing right now to save herself because she screwed herself. She was caught lying. Everyone knew she was lying. Everyone knew the DNC sat there and worked overtime for Hillary Clinton. She wasn't hiding it from anybody. And now she's sitting there and trying to cover her ass, saying that try to come out like a hero. She lied through and through. She knew what the DNC was happening the entire way. She's doing it now that she doesn't have a job, that she's being sued, that she's being investigated. Now she's coming out and slandering the DNC. Some people, it would be... I really believe this. Our country would be immensely better if politicians and political figures knew when their time to get off stage was.
Right.
Donna Brazile's time to get off stage has come and passed.
Yeah, but she won't admit it. I mean, we have such ridiculous people out there. And I'll tell you the God's honest truth. I think... It's sickening. It's really sickening. I don't remember it being as bad when I was a kid. I remember no matter who was president, you loved them.
Well, you were
if you voted for
them.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, you loved the president no matter what, whether you voted for him or not, right? He was still the president. But it's not really the way it is anymore. People openly hate the president. And that's scary to me. I don't like it. And I think you could vote for who you want. But then when the wrong guy wins, you have to say, okay, you know, let's go back to being, and we'll see you 4 years from now. We'll vote for whoever we want again. But it's just ridiculous. Like I don't know what we're gonna do to get past all this shit. You know what I mean? Like
I don't know if there is something that we can. There's certainly no magic trick. Half a dozen Republican politicians were nearly assassinated by a crazed left-wing lunatic
at a baseball game
earlier this year. And, days later, the DNC was slandering people. There was no truth. There was no lesson learned. It was your side versus my side. But it's also because of the fact that back in the day, there was more reverence for people, but the institutions were a lot more secure back in the day. You had reverence for the media and for religious figures. You had reverence for civic leaders. You had reverence for the president because you believed in the institutions. And with the exception of the military, almost no institution has managed to survive at all. It's the crisis of millennials and why millennials have such an identity problem, I believe, because there is really no institution for my generation to sit there and fall back on. Faith has been completely wiped out. So they, you know, they've made up these fake institutions or they've made up this fake hope to sit there and say, you know, in a new modern far left progressive religion that they are going to find a candidate to sit there and stamp out racism or just to fight against, you know, who knows what. It's just to sit there and to have an identity to believe in, because the institutions that used to give people identities aren't worth anything anymore to most people.
Right, and that's why people I think are so mad about these football players taking the knee, because it's like the last thing that we all had was the frigging national anthem, and they're trying to destroy that. I mean, you know, it's like,
yeah.
And for what?
Yeah, I'm not a football fan at all. I don't care. Care less about. If they disbanded the NFL, I wouldn't care. I don't watch football. I don't care about football whatsoever. I'm a Yankees fan, but I barely even watch that anymore. You know what? I think it was an easy thing for Trump to sit there and to attack. At the end of the day, it became more about being anti-Trump than being for anything else. It's just ridiculous, and it boils down to the fact that we don't really have anything anymore. Being an American is a unique thing because we have no real common ancestry. We have no real common faith. We have no real common anything. We have only common civics. We have common experiences. But when
sounds very common to me.
What?
It sounds like there's nothing to believe in, so people are just going after each other.
No,
like
we used to have back in like the 50s to the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. The 90s were really the last period. All Americans watched the same things. We all experienced 9/11 together. We all experienced people who were alive, experienced the Kennedy assassination. A third of the country was watching the Cosby Show. You had everyone watch Johnny Carson. You had similar experiences that united us. Yes, there was racial tension. Yes, there was divisions, but you had a similar culture that brought every human being together. And I think that when I think a big problem really was when we sat there and we politicians, and this is what I truly believe, politicians in this country at some point just said screw it about American citizens. I think that the elite in this country really did feel that Americans are dispensable and disposable, and both parties, both political parties, the Republicans and the Democrats. And so they got tied up in their own versions of political religion. The Democrats sat there in throughout the entire 90s, and not in really 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, Democrats started positioning themselves as the party of exclusive diversity. That means that we will eventually be able to have permanent power, and this is the Democrat platform, not outwardly, but get a consultant drunk and they'll talk about it. Democratic platform is just wait 30 more years. We can bring in enough immigrants into this country. We will never have to campaign for another white vote, and everyone will be a Democrat, and the whole country will be California. And at the same exact time, the Republican Party said, screw these rednecks. We're not going to protect their jobs. We're not going to fight for a single one of their wages. We don't care if their cities and towns get flooded with opioids. We're going to sit there and give out to our donor base. And that has been happening successfully for the last 20 years. And that is why Donald Trump is president today, as a reaction to that. Donald Trump is the accumulation of those experiences of hostilities by the elite for 20 some odd years. And that is why I think that things are starting to change a little bit here and there. That bill that came out, that tax bill, the wealthy didn't get a tax cut at all. didn't get a single tax cut at all. I couldn't believe the Republicans were fighting for that, because the Republicans in the House, I forget the congressman's name, he's from Texas. He's absolutely horrible. He should be kicked out of office. He wrote the Obamacare repeal bill. Terrible, terrible, terrible Republican congressman from Texas. He wanted to reduce 401k plans. And he had a miserable bunch of ideas. And Donald Trump, God bless him, and I really mean that, sat there and said, I will not sign a bill that has a reduction in 401ks. He's like, this is insane. And he sat there and fought it. And when the bill came out today, it was 90% excellent. Kamala Harris and a bunch of other Democrats got up there and said, this raises taxes on the rich. And the Washington Post even had to sit there and say, no, you're lying. It raises taxes on the middle class. The Washington Post gave it for Pinocchio, says, no, it doesn't raise taxes on the middle class. This is a major tax cut for the middle class. And I think that that is a huge sign. This is the very first time I've seen legislatively that Republicans responding positively to the president's agenda. Hasn't happened yet before. May not have. This is the very, very first time I saw him actually push his influence on the Republicans in Congress. Now, will it mean that, you know, the Democrats and also in Virginia, Democrat governor candidate Nostrom, whatever his name is, he's the lieutenant governor and now running for governor, sat there and said, if Virginia ever gets a sanctuary city, I'm going to defund them. It was a Democrat saying that. I was shocked. But I think that there are twinklings of a populist movement. And, you know, Trump doesn't have all the answers. His movement doesn't have all the answers. Similar to Bernie Sanders doesn't have all the answers. But they're asking a lot of the right questions. And I consult candidates all the time. I constantly tell them, you know, these are the issues that are defining us. These are the issues that that you, if you are elected, have to answer. It's about things like, our education and our infrastructure. And the fact that in 30 years, and this is the Obama economic team said this, in 30 years, 70% of all jobs that make under $40,000 a year will be obsolete. They'll be moved out by technology. And what are we going to do with the poorest among us, the people who are already giving up 30 years down the line? Now, if your answer is we're going to replace them a bunch of Nigerian immigrants who are going to have more kids than them, and not Nigerian, Canadian, Mexican, Japanese, wherever the hell they come from, and they're going to do the grunt work for the next, and then we're going to replace them with robots, and we'll have a nation of 100 million people who are unemployable. If that's the future you want, then go for it. But if the future you want, Theron says, let's focus on being proactive instead of reactive. Let's focus on remodeling education on for 21st century jobs, on protecting trade deals. Every single position you should make as a politician should be, is this good for the American worker? Is this good for the middle class? Is it good for the struggling American who wants a job and wants to be a productive member of society? And if the answer is ever no, you should be fervently against it regardless of a political party.
You know, the truth is every society that has been destroyed from Rome, Greece, it's been destroyed when the underclass reaches a certain tipping point. And their middle class shrinks to an extent where there's a very small middle class. When it's only rich and poor, the society dies. You know, and I think you agree with that to some extent.
Well, I mean, it's different for every society. Societies die for and nations die for, I think, a number of reasons. Too many wars, which certainly we've been experiencing, from financial crises, from money, from overspending and borrowing, and and their dollar becoming their monetary unit becoming worthless. Societies die when they're overly decadent and they don't invest in their civic institutions. There's a number of reasons why societies die, and we're experiencing all of that. And I was just on the phone with a congressional candidate today, and he really had only been surrounded by DC types, by establishment types.
Right.
And I sat there with him and I'm telling him, you know, and he's running as a Republican in Pennsylvania. And he sat there and said, you know, well, I agree with this and I don't agree with that. And I'm trying to sit there and say, the problem a lot of people have with the Trump message is the messenger. It's not the message itself. But if you can move it into an inclusive message that you're sitting there and selling to working class Americans of all stripes, of all races, of all religion, you can sit there and make this something that is
good not only for today, but it's also good for the future, because that's what you need to sit there and market. It's not what's happening now. It's 20 years down the road. And that's the problem with our politics, is that it's constantly reflective. It's almost always about reactive. And it seems that, you know, like even take the terrorist attack. We saw what happened in Paris and Berlin and all over the country with these cars running into people. You think that this mayor sat there and said, maybe we should start protecting bicycle lanes and walkways, and we should start putting a anything?
They are now.
No. Well, yeah. Well, maybe now that it's actually happened in New York, but vehicular attacks are only going to increase.
And the marathon is 2 days away, and I would tell you, this town's going to be locked down for the marathon. I live on the Upper East Side. I'm right near it. There's already military vehicles pulling up into the neighborhood for this marathon. I think that they woke up finally concerning this stuff. But it's the kind of thing, how are you going to stop it? How are you going to stop a crazy guy driving a car? It's almost impossible.
It is almost impossible. But what is their solution? There was a program that the New York Police Department used to do where it would investigate mosques that were producing extremism. Now, this man didn't certainly come from it, but they gutted that.
I know. It was very stupid.
Oh, no, we're not going to look at it. Because you cannot question the orthodoxy. I interviewed him once, and he's one of my political heroes, Pat Buchanan, always said,
Nixon's speechwriter.
Yeah, Nixon's speechwriter, Reagan's speechwriter, and I think he worked for President Ford. But what he said was that of all the political beliefs in America today, conservatism, this is a Burkean idea, conservatism is not an ism, it is a philosophy that is a linkage of the past and the present, but we don't have a clear orthodox policy on, or a clear orthodoxy on policy. It's movable. Russell Kirk, the founder of modern American conservatism, endorsed in his lifetime socialists, he endorsed libertarians, he endorsed nationalists. He was bendable because the overarching theme is not an orthodoxy of religion. And what their modern-day conservatism in the last 20, 30 years has become this strange monster of hyper-evangelicalism mixed with
liberty. Just let me interrupt. You remember William F. Buckley? F. Buckley was the conservative guy. He was erudite.
Yeah.
He was intelligent. He was well-read. He wasn't a Southern hillbilly snake handler like what the conservatives call themselves now. This guy, he knew what he was talking about. The conservative part of the Republican Party has gone from the William F. Buckleys and the Crystals to, you know, these wacko Southern, you know, Bible stompers. That's my problem.
Not so much. I was going to say it has become this mix of hyper-evangelicalism, hyper-evangelical morality mixed with ultra-libertarian economics mixed with neoconservative foreign policy.
Those
three things, by the way, are except for libertarianism, but all the other two things are former parts of the Democratic Party. S.C. Cupp just yesterday was talking about sending boots on the ground all over the world to stamp out ISIS. It was insane. She's learned nothing from the Iraq War. She's learned nothing from our failures in the Middle East. I mean, completely and totally, it is the definition of insanity to sit there and try to do the same thing over and over again. And it's not something to sit there and shit on Southerners or Midwesterners or evangelicals or any of those things. You could be intelligent and be any of those things. It's a matter of, and I know a lot of people who are very stupid and are none of those things. It's a matter of having a rigid form of orthodoxy that does not allow you to be proactive and to bend to the times and to change with the times. And what Jonah Goldberg, who's a conservative writer, Jewish, Northeastern, lives in Washington, D.C., nothing even remotely like a Southern hillbilly evangelical, very well-spoken, intelligent man. He wrote an article back 10 years ago, and he was talking about how he still stands by it, how America should recolonize Africa. It was mental.
It was truly mental. And he's a major writer for National Review.
Wow.
And you have to sit there and say, you have to be doing drugs, or I should be doing drugs. I don't really understand which way it is. But it is that he is married, and he has welded himself to a neoconservative foreign policy, and that is the answer, and war is the answer, and it is the answer every and all time. And that is part of the reason Donald Trump is president today.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Mark, you don't mind if I talk
I
to
hope I didn't go on too long. I feel like I've been talking quite
no,
a bit.
No, not at all. Not at all, Ryan. I think you're brilliant. And, you know, I really enjoyed listening to you, and I'd love to talk to you again. I know you probably only had about 40, 45 minutes.
Yeah, I have
to. I'm
tying my shoes because I have to get going now, yeah. I love talking to you guys, too.
No, and, you know, anytime, brother, anytime. You know, guys like you are very few and far between. Let me ask you one quick question before you go. Do you get to meet, like, the president ever? Does that ever get to happen or any?
Have I met Donald Trump?
Yeah.
No, I haven't met I haven't met Donald Trump. I've been in situations where I was invited to go to events with him, and I'm a homebody. I don't kiss ass with like famous people or celebrities. I know people who do, but if you go to my Instagram or my Twitter account, I don't take pictures of people who are famous. I don't have that urge to sit there with him. If I was invited to sit there with him and discuss my ideas, I would take him up the offer. I don't sit there to go there to take a photo op with him. And I've been in situations that with like Giuliani and Pataki, and they're very nice people, and no, I'm not hating on anybody, but I don't need to sit there to prove to anybody who I am because I know X, Y, and Z.
That's
just not my thing.
Yeah, but it's not even for that reason, just to be near the guy. But still, but listen.
Yeah, that's not my thing. I don't need to be near somebody.
All right. Awesome. Well, listen,
but when I have a message to take out, when I have something I have to sit there and get out to an important person, maybe not the president, but if I need a message to be delivered to somebody high up, a senator, a television personality, I have the means to sit there and get my message to them, if that's what you're wondering. And sometimes even when I don't have a connection directly to it, really quick story, when Trump met with Chuck and Nancy for his conversation about DACA, I got a phone call from somebody associated with the White House. I'll just leave it like that. He said to me, because I was texting everybody saying, is this real? Is this serious? And they said, yes, it is. This was a real conversation. Trump is all on board with the DACA amnesty. And that's when I took to Twitter and I took to any form, any means I had to sit there and talk to a large group of people. I said, we need to have a message that's serious, and we need to start burning our MAGA hats, our Make America Great hats. I said, we need to light them on fire. And I lit mine on fire, and other supporters lit their stuff on fire, and it went viral. I was on MSNBC talking about it, and I got back a message saying that the president saw my MAGA hat on fire as well as everyone else's, and he was extraordinarily upset. And a couple of days later, the DACA deal was dead.
Wow.
Because I sat there and said to him, he has to tell his base. His base has to tell him that they are fierce. The problem with the, you know, do you know, and no one's going to know who he is. I don't know why I bother mentioning his name. There's a man named Bill Mitchell. He's got a lot of Twitter followers, like 250,000. And he's famous because he sat there and anything at all Trump did throughout the entire campaign, wrong, right, or indifferent, he stood by his side. And he said Trump was going to win every single day. Trump's going to win. And he beat the experts because the experts were wrong and he was right. And but he does not disagree with Trump whatsoever. So I was sitting next to a very good friend of mine who's close with him. And I just said to her, I said, I want you to know, I told her that whole story with the doc and burning the hats. I said, I want you to know, it was far more important for us to have this victory because we were willing to tell the president, we're going to leave you if you do this, than to sit there and to kiss his ass and to say, everything you do is great. The liberal media always lies, which they do, but that's not the point. The point is, you have on any given day, Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham on Fox News will be very hard on the president, and they'll sit there and they'll hold his feet to the fire. And the base of any political movement needs to sit there and hold their needs to hold their politicians who they've elected to office accountable, and they need on any position, and they need to tell them, no, I'm not going to vote for you. You know, and the reason I believe so many people and so many movements have been lost is because certain populations in this country are inflexible. You know, had we had two political parties vying for conservative beliefs, we certainly would see more conservative things come out. That's what happened with guns. Politicians, irregardless of political party in certain areas of this country, they're all pro-gun. And that is why gun legislation will never happen in this country, ever. Ever, 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 ever. It is the one culture war the right won, because it's been wielded onto both parties. Everyone has to adopt it. If you run for Montana, no matter who you are, you're running pro-gun. Same thing with Vermont. Same thing with, New Hampshire and Minnesota, and maybe not Minnesota, but Michigan, certainly everyone's pro-gun. They're pro-gun because they've wielded it to the culture, and both politicians fight for gun owners because they're a flexible vote. On the other hand, black voters, because 90 to 95% of them vote Democrat every time, black voters get screwed by this country every year. They get screwed because no one's fighting for their votes. Because they know, Democrats know they're not going to lose them, Republicans know they're not going to gain them, so there's no fighting for them whatsoever. You know, maybe one little thing here and one little thing there, but that is why despair and hopelessness is just as bad as it was a decade ago. And that's the problem with political people, is they're too married to parties and not, you know, their own convictions.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point, because you're absolutely right. You know, if you give it away too easy, that's like if you go out, it's like you give it away too easy, you don't make somebody work for it. You know what I mean? Like, then you don't even want it. I got you.
Yeah.
I got exactly what you're saying. But
yeah. Does that make sense, Mark?
But everything, you're not as – you know, like we talk about conservatives and things. I'm pretty liberal as far as most things go, and you and I agree on a lot of things. So I think that there's been a fallacy. I think people need to think, and what you said before about being inflexible, you know, you have to be able to see both sides of a situation and actually change your views if your views are stupid, not just force yourself because you like Chuck Schumer. You know, you can't, or Trump, like you did with Trump. He did something you didn't like, and you didn't kiss his ass. And, you know, people have to be open to be willing to, like, question their theocracy, their beliefs, because,
yeah.
You know, it's not holy.
And the elected officials, especially.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's the absolute truth. You have to be willing to question your elected officials. And I think that is always important. And I'll say one last quick thing, is that when the attack happened yesterday in New York, the guy got in on the diversity lottery visa.
I know.
The Democrats were like, well, we can't question that. And it made me – and I thought it was insane. And it made me think of when every mass shooting has happened and Republicans sit there and inflexibly say, we cannot question guns.
Right.
And I, for a moment, I said, this is what they talk about. This is what, when Democrats say, you guys must be insane about gun things, this is why they're saying it, because they're having their moment like I'm having my moment right now. I'm sitting there and saying, you must be insane to say we can't question a government policy because it doesn't, doesn't bode well with your political philosophy, like they've been having it every time I say you can't question gun policy. So I do believe in being more, looking deeper inside yourself and saying, well, does this really make sense, and having those kinds of moments?
Well, I will tell you, we have to do this again. Politics is such a huge part of everybody's life now. I mean, it's inescapable. And I don't think that too many people are as smart as you are. We have a lot of fun on this show,
true.
But I think this was fun tonight. So I want to
thank you
so much.
I had fun too. I'll do another time.
Thank you, brother.
All right,
thanks for being
here.
I'll
see you next week.
Week at the comedy, at doing comedy, yeah.
Yeah, all right, great.
All
talk
right,
to you then. Thanks, you're a great guest, man.
Thank you.
So where can people find you, Ryan? What's your website?
I don't have a personal website right now, but you can – actually do. I have a website I write every day called dailygunstory.com. It gives out daily news stories about people who protect their lives and their property because they own a firearm. And on Twitter, at Ryan Gradusky, and Facebook, Ryan James Gradusky.
Perfect. Thank you so much, brother. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Anytime. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Thank you.
See you soon. Well, there you go.
It sounds a little bit like Milo.
yeah, right. He does in a way. Doesn't have the English accent, though.
You're a very smart guy. I let you talk a little too much tonight. I just want to let you know that that will not be happening often.
Me. I'm a political wonk. You know, I read the books. I read everything. So you know how I am. But, no, he's a very smart guy, man. He's really smart. He knows shit. And he's able to – not only does he know shit, he knows how to explain it in a fairly simple way that, you know, people can understand what he's talking about.
Yeah. Well, I think that anybody who's listening to the show tonight, I don't really know how many listeners we're having lately. I don't really think we're getting tons of listeners. I don't know. I haven't been looking at the numbers because I don't give a shit. I really don't give a shit. But
just as long as they watch the cartoon, that's all I care about right now.
Yeah, I think that anybody who's listening to that show tonight got to say, like, wow, like that was some entertaining shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that was a conversation you could get like on any. I think that was a better conversation you could get anywhere, really.
I mean, it was like Meet the Press. You know, it was like the Sunday
show. Yeah, like it
shows.
Was an awesome fucking conversation. I mean, you know, so that guy was tremendous. Ryan James, I don't want to mess up his last name, Gudersky, but
right.
Just a very, very, very smart guy.
And he's,
you know, of course,
he's also
we have
a pretty
lot of
good
people.
Comedian, too.
Yeah. You know, and look, like we started out the conversation talking about Milo Yiannopoulos. That guy was a phenomenon for a while. I mean, that guy was crazy, crazy, crazy big. I mean, he was huge in the news. And he's sitting there telling us he wrote his speeches for him. I mean, that's kind of big.
Yeah.
I mean, and so, like, wow. So, cool. That was very cool. Okay. I what did I do today? I showed a $40,000 fucking house.
$40,000 house?
Yeah, fucking yay!
What is it, one room? What is it?
Yeah, no, it's like just the way it is, dude. It's the way it is down here. You know what I mean? And, I mean, no, there's some nice shit, but, you know, it's just fucking... I listed another house. You know, I sent out the paperwork for the fucking lady to sign. Did she sign it yet? No. They don't understand. It's time sensitive shit. I have 24 hours to get the shit in the fucking MLS. Can you sign it? No. Maybe I'll sign it tomorrow. You know, I got to call up and beg 50 fucking times. Open the fucking email, sign, you know what I mean? It's like the most, it's honestly, you know what I'm saying? It's like fucking, you know, it's just the fucking way it is, you know what I'm saying? And then I get to talk like that with like a very cool guy. The problem is nobody pays me to talk to the cool guy, you know what I mean? But at least
this will come in time.
Yeah, well, I don't know that, but okay.
Well, look, you got the cartoon now. People are paying you to write comedy, right? So maybe this will come too.
Oh, maybe. But what I'm saying is that at least I get to do it. Some people don't even get to talk to people like him. So,
right. You know, the funny thing is. You know, I it's funny. You meet somebody with Gladys's, you know, and you hang out and you talk, and you know, you you stand outside the club and you go in, you go out, and they come and they talk to Bob, and you don't realize, it's happened a couple of times, you know, oh, my God, you do that? It's like, oh, fuck, you, I had no, pretty good, you know, but you already know the guy, so it's no big deal to you, you know, so you're like, you're impressed with him. I mean, I'm impressed with him to one extent, but I already know him. I knew him before I knew what he did. So, you know, to me, he's just Ryan, but he's smart. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Because I already.
But I know, I understand. But still, I mean, I think of all the people I have met, and you know, all the people I talk to every day who have no idea of the people I know. It's like funny.
Right.
And all the fucking people on Facebook that know me and comment on little shit I say and stuff, and they think like, and they see me, and they you know whatever, and they have no idea the shit that I've already done. And
right.
They think I have no career, or and they're right. I have no career, but you know.
Yeah, but you do, you do. But, now you know. Now, I mean, the cartoon's a fucking big thing. Everybody's talking about it. You know, I mean, Gladys and Bob, and you know, starting to filter into. I think even maybe, you know, the comic strip owners and stuff. I'm not sure, but it's getting talked up a lot, which makes me a little nervous. But also, I like it. You know. You know, I've got to be honest with you.
Nervous?
Because, you know, it's like I'm starting to smell success and it's scaring me. Like, how am I going to fuck it up? You know, that's what I always so, – but, you know,
don't
that's –
don't even fucking talk like that because I don't like negativity. I mean, I know you're a little
I agree with
you.
I'm trying – I agree with you. I agree with you. So I have to fight it. But, you know, I agree with you 100%. I'm not really negative, but – sometimes I start to get a little nervous, that's all. But that's part of the game.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about fucking up because it's my thing, so you ain't going to fuck it up. You just keep your voice and shut
well, yeah,
up.
I'm worried that my voice will go out and I won't be able to do the gay guy or I won't be able to do the black guy anymore or something will happen, you know, you know, I mean, you know, I got all these paranoid fantasies, these things that go on in my brain.
Just be good and just shut the fuck up. Don't put the picture out of the universe, you know what I mean?
I understand. No, you're right. You're right. I basically I'm feeling really good about all this. So 90% of the time, if I can just manage to live long enough to reap the rewards, then I'll be happy.
Look, we you know, nothing's fucking written in stone anywhere. You know what I mean?
Correct. Correct, my friend.
You know what I'm saying? It's like whatever. You know,
but I'm having a good time. And that's
yeah, it's exactly what I was just going to say. We're having a good time. I think they look pretty good. I think I'm enjoying doing it. I think watching them is pretty fun. You know what I mean? And
oh, yeah. I mean, when I, you know, like my phone lights up and I mean, and there's these little drawings talking what
yeah.
I'm me and you. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun, you know, and I'm getting tremendous feedback, which is very gratifying.
Yeah, me
you know?
Too, man. It's like, holy shit, you know, like, well, I don't want to go into it because, you know, I don't want to start, but, you know, it's, I'm getting good response 98.9% of the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, nobody's.
And my nephew loves it. The one you met with the two kids, he's crazy about the cartoon. He's nuts about it. I don't know if he lets the two boys watch it because it's a little bit, you know, much for them. I don't know. Maybe he does. I got to ask him when I see him next. But, you know, my sister is like, she's kind of, you know, people, you know, they don't understand sometimes. Oh, that's you? You know, you're involved in this? You? You know, it's funny, but it's interesting. So I'm very happy about it all.
All right, brother. Well, that's going to do it for the show tonight, everybody. We will see you next week. Or
wait a minute, don't
not.
You want to know what I'm having for dinner?
Oh, what are you having for dinner?
Tonight, because I was in the hospital getting my stupid shit done, I went to the kosher place, and I got knockwurst and potato salad and a health salad. With sauerkraut, and I'm going to feast in about 5 minutes.
Well, you enjoy that, and you know, fucking God forbid you ever eat anything healthy.
I do. I go to Health Salad. They have a very nice health salad that's delicious.
Enjoy, Marco.
I will, my friend. Thank you, my friend.
Thank
now
you,
it's
friend.
Time to say goodnight. Next week, our guest will be Donald Trump and Kathy Griffin, who will be having a mud wrestling match.
All right. See you guys next week. Thank you,
Brian. Bye.
Yes, thank you,
Brian.
Bye-bye.